Hello there. You're listening to the Watson's Daily Podcast with me, Peter Watson, on Wednesday, the 13th of December. Today, I am joined by Duncan Belkin, who is a Watson's Daily ambassador. Hi there, Duncan. How are you doing today?
Hi, Peter. I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, all good. All good, thank you. So, today, what story would you like to talk about from Watson's Daily?
Yes, I picked out a story from the FT originally about UK wage growth easing and the subsequent kind of softening labour market. Mm-hmm. So the article itself talks about the fact that wage growth in the UK slowed down in the 3 months to October to 7.3% if you exclude bonuses, which is kind of a lot lower than the 8.5% that the market was expecting for that kind of time period. So that's, you know, kind of interesting itself, obviously, but quite significantly different figure, really.
Yeah.
And now traders are saying this means that the Bank of England could possibly cut interest rates sooner rather than later, which is another, I think, interesting aspect in terms of what that could mean for people generally. And then there's also a bit of data in there from the Office of National Statistics saying that job vacancies have fallen for the 17th month in a row, which is a longer and more sustained climb than kind of even when we had the kind of financial crisis in 2008 after that. That being said, the number of vacancies is still higher than it was pre-pandemic. So much as that looks like a stat, you can go, whoa, that's interesting. You then have to factor in, I think, the effect of COVID on that figure. So it is a 17th month in a row where that job vacancy kind of has fallen, but it is still not quite where it was pre-pandemic. So I think there's a few interesting things about this. Once, obviously, it's a slowdown. That kind of, but wages are still rising on the whole, and vacancies are still up compared to kind of pre-pandemic. If we take that figure, I think, which is probably, in my head, that's more important, I think, than the 17th month in a row thing, because a lot got messed up by COVID, and if we're looking at recovering post COVID, we kind of need to be comparing, I think, to the figures before the pandemic. And the other interesting thing I think about this is this prediction by traders that the Bank of England could cut interest rates soon. And I think that is a really interesting thing, because there's a tightrope, I think, to be walked there. Obviously, if you cut interest rates too soon, you have a real risk of prolonging inflation. However, if you do the opposite and leave it too late and leave the rates too high for too long, or even raise them, then you risk kind of knackering. I think knackering is probably not the right word, but you know, risk affecting economic growth. So I can kind of see why traders are making this prediction. But I think it's like I said, a real tightrope for the Bank of England to walk. And I personally, they're reporting tomorrow, aren't they? I think I don't think we're going to see any movement. But I can see why traders are saying we might do. So I just find it interesting. What's your take on this one?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's quite unusual. I get the feeling that it is quite rare to have the Fed, the ECB, and the Bank of England to report in the same week in terms of the interest rate. Usually, it seems to me, and again, it's just a perception of mine, that it's usually the US that goes first, and then a lot, then the others kind of tend to copy, but independently come to the same conclusion.
Have a look as to what they said, and then make some decisions.
So it's quite interesting. I think that the general consensus view is that although inflation appears to be slowing down, it's still not, you know, it's still, they're still not keen to cut interest rates just yet. And therefore, it looks like it's going to be the interest rates will not be changed. That's the expectation as of now. But it might, I'm just trying, you know, looking around vaguely, seeing whether I'm going to get any alerts while we do this. And you know, the US puts the interest rates up. But anyway, that's the expectation. It's always a difficult balance to be had. The classic thing is that central banks have had the tendency in the past, and certainly, in recent years, to increase interest rates too late, and then they start cutting them too late as well, you know, once they've served their purpose. So whether or not they're going to fall into the same trap, I don't know. But it is a difficult choice. You know, it's a difficult thing. So it's just one of those things. But anyway, the thing is, wages are still rising, and vacancies are still quite high in terms of jobs. So although the momentum is weakening, they are still high sort of historically. But there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I say, very interesting that all three, like you said, are reporting at the same time this week. Mm. I've done the same thing. I've kept up news alerts for the for the Fed just in case, but nothing comes yet. Mm. Like you said, it'd be interesting to see what happens if the Fed do, like you say, put rates up. Uh-huh. But I would be hoping and expecting to see no change from Bank of England when they report tomorrow. Yeah. But we'll see. So I thought it was interesting, because obviously there are obviously those implications based on what the Bank of England decide to do.
Yeah.
And obviously it's interesting that, like I said, for once, I can't remember it happening before, all three reporting at the same time.
Yeah.
Like I say, rather than waiting for the for the Americans to make a decision and then coming to an independent conclusion based purely off that decision. So that was my favorite story in today's Watson Daily. What was yours, Peter?
Well, mine is about Hiscox, which is an insurance, UK insurance company. Mm-hmm. And this story comes from the Financial Times. And basically, Hiscox has developed an AI model with Google. And the idea is it can automate the core underwriting process for specialist risks. And it's going to start using this tool from the second half of next year. Now, I think potentially this may herald the end of a profession, possibly. You know, certainly elements within insurance, like, say, actuaries, for instance, because it seems to me, and again, this is maybe my naivety, right? But so, and by the way, I sent Ralph a WhatsApp earlier, said, and I've asked him whether we can do a special one-off podcast on insurance and the actuarial profession, because I think he's at least part qualified. I think actually he has been an actuary. He was a qualified actuary, and he has been obviously an insurance analyst. So I thought he would have an interesting point of view. But anyway, prior to that, my impression is that insurance in particular, I think, is vulnerable to the advance of AI, because in order to reach premiums, the premiums that you are charged on a monthly basis, you have to look at patterns in the way people behave, and there are a lot of inputs on this, you know, in terms of there can be environmental inputs in terms of how often people, say, have car accidents when it's raining, and that then feeds into, how much rain does a particular region get, or is it subject to landslides? Is it this or that? You know, all these variables sort of get plugged in by very clever people, and they get a figure spat out at the other end, and then this helps to give you the premium that you pay at the end. Yeah. It translates it all into a premium. Now, I think that the reason why I think that AI can do this better than a human is because, well, I think it will certainly be able to do it faster than a human, at the very least.
And that's the thing, isn't it? It's very process-led, so you'd think AI would be able to pump all those numbers in and pull that data from there quicker than a human could do it.
Yeah, yeah. And, so I think that they will be able to come up with an answer quicker than a human can. Now, Whether that is the same result that a human would come up with, or it's incorrect or correct, but I would imagine that, you know, the this is kind of, there's not an absolute answer, but there's probably a like a best answer. So I think that, you know, they'll be quicker. Now, interestingly, you know, they were saying about how, they were saying about how this is very, this is just, don't worry, we're not replacing humans. The human's going to oversee the AI model and all that kind of thing. And I just think that sounds like a precursor to them getting rid of loads of people. Because what happens if you have, say, someone, obviously you're going to have to be quite senior to oversee the models. You're going to have experience and all that kind of thing. But you don't need that many of you. So that's one thing. And the second thing is, what about the next generation of actuaries, for instance? Because to actually know how the AI should work, you need experience, you need the nuts and bolts, you need to go from that like junior position doing some of the donkey work, you know, you do, to then understand the other things that come in on top of that. But then if the AI does all that, you know, the so-called simple mundane stuff,
yeah,
the new people that come into the profession aren't going to learn the basics enough that they will be able to understand the AI so that they can actually oversee it. So I don't know. I mean, it just feels to me, like I said, I will do a podcast on this, but it does at this stage, and from reading this article, it does feel to me like this particular profession, you know, so insurance and potentially, you know, actuaries, they are hugely vulnerable to AI. And I think that although this may not be something that happens overnight, I would have thought this is going to be something that it happens within the next 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, like you said, I think part of vulnerability as well comes from the fact that if you have senior analysts or senior actuaries training this AI at the moment, say, it won't take too long, I would imagine, before the AI is more competent at doing the basic jobs than someone, the junior member of staff.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting, because then you're looking at the case of, well, the AI is trained, it knows what it's doing, we've ironed out all the bugs, and then really what you probably need is either a data analyst or a software engineer or someone to maintain the AI. You don't actually need the insurance expert or the lower level actuary or something. And like I say, you need much fewer staff, and what you really need is people then to maintain the AI, not train it, because in theory you can get all the training done with the senior staff you've got in at the moment. But I think you're right. I think it puts potentially, like I say, whole career paths at risk. And obviously they're saying that, saying they're going, obviously we still need humans to do this, and which just sounds like corporate spiel for, yes, eventually we'll be able to phase those humans out. But it is one of those jobs, I think, based off everything we've discussed, I think, with AI, that is probably most kind of in line with what AI is capable of at the moment. It's very process-led, it's number-orientated. Like, you can, it's very easy, I think, to train, I would imagine, obviously I'm not an expert, to train a bot or an AI model to do this stuff, because it's well, so first you pull these data points and analyze, and then you pull these. And yeah, a human can do that, but you would imagine AI can do it quicker. And providing the data sets they're pulling from are accurate, it's not going to make a mistake. And you know, I say it's very interesting, because it does potentially put, like I say, a very specialized, historically specialized job at risk.
Yeah. A specialized, a very highly paid job as well. That's the thing. So it's, you know, it's a very good quality job. It takes years and years to qualify as an actuary. So yeah, and I do think that so there's going to be difficulties coming along the road, I think. So first of all, there's the, you know, like, AI is surely going to replace whole swathes of jobs in the insurance industry. So that's the first stage. But then the second stage, I think, is going to be everyone's going to go, hold on a minute, there's less people, you're using AI. So my insurance premiums should be way lower. And so there's then going to be that battle, because this is something I think that we're already kind of seeing in the legal profession, where, you know, you've got all these law firms who are, you know, experimenting with using AI in-house,
yeah,
and potentially with a view to letting their clients see this sort of thing. The questions are already being asked there by clients. They're saying, well, hold on a minute, if you're using AI to do all the drafting and this, that, and the other, you know, this kind of stuff, why are we paying you the same amount that we were when you had humans doing it?
Yeah, because it's clearly not taking four junior lawyers 3 days to do it. An AI bot's churning it out in about an hour. So,
yeah,
why are we paying the same amount? Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it?
So, you know, I think we are starting to see the impact. I mean, at the moment, I think we're in very, very early days. People still are a bit sceptical, I think, about certain aspects of AI. But once it starts to be normalized, more normalized than it is now, people will trust it more, and they will trust it with bigger things. And so, could spread. But anyway,
like I said, whole not just this one, but whole career paths could be ripped as a result.
Exactly. So on that uplifting notes, I'm gonna have to sort of I'm gonna have to bring it to a halt there. I mean, I think that this isn't something to get, you know, I don't want to end on a bad note here, right? So, I mean, I think that in terms of careers generally, I think people have to be more mindful of how AI. So rather than thinking, oh, what would I like to do? What am I good at? Which is great, which is what you should still do. You need to overlay that with, which bits of this job can AI do, or that will AI be able, you know, which aspects of this job will AI be able to do better than me? And if it's the whole thing, then clearly that's not good, right? So, so you know, you need to avoid that. But
I guess also, if you're looking at, say, you're doing your A levels now, or GCSEs now, and what you want to do in life is be an actuary.
Mm-hmm.
For example, and you're listening to this and you go, oh my word, maybe there's not gonna be a job for me. The chances are this change won't happen quickly anyway. But also, you could be looking at doing like more of a hybrid degree. So yeah, you were gonna do pure maths, why not do maths in computing? Because then you probably have more of an understanding of how the AI works as well. Like I said, there are ways around it to make yourself, like I say, more future proof, I guess, as a human being.
Yeah. But I just think that the days of just blindly sort of hoping that, this seems all right, I mean, this is a good career, you need now more than ever to really think about where it's going and what bits that AI is going to do. Because it's no good. I mean, like, if let's say you're in a company and you were, you know, you were tasked with training the AI, I mean, effectively, it's, as they say, turkeys voting for Christmas. I mean, you are sitting there and you are going to help your own replace yourself, basically.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the more militant minded of people may decide to deliberately not do a particularly great job or try to somehow put a spanner in the works. I don't think that's a good idea, because at some point that's going to be found out anyway. So I think the thing is to try to roll with it and adapt what you want to do. And I think that, I mean, it's a massive generalization, but jobs that involve empathy, human contact, relationships, you know, understanding, are always going to be okay, you know. And so it's just a case of, there might have to be some kind of shift in mindset about the way certain professions are perceived. I mean, for instance, I mean, I, you know, was watching TV this morning, and, you know, people were talking about how the caring, you know, care profession is very understaffed, and a lot of that is to do with being underappreciated, And that is also to do with the fact that it doesn't pay very well. So, you know, maybe the some professions are going to need a bit of a perception makeover, perhaps, you know, to make sure that people are attracted into them. But like I say, I think anyone listening to this, I think anyone, even if, you know, whatever job you're doing, you need to be thinking about how AI can help and or, you know, potentially be your help you and or be your enemy in the future and adapt accordingly. But there you go. So there we go. Kind of ending on a philosophical note today, trying to end on a on an up a more of a hopeful note rather than leave you on a downer. I'm just going to say I probably won't be doing this podcast tomorrow, but we, you know, there will be. I am in the middle of doing various different types of podcasts. Just thought, you know, shake it up a bit and see what listeners, what you guys think out there of that. But anyway, thank you very much, Duncan. You are irreplaceable. AI will never replace Duncan Balcon. But anyway,
it's always good to know. I'm just imagining what an AI bot speaks about me would sound like and what I could get it to do for me.
So anyway, yes, irreplaceable, Duncan Balcon, ladies and gentlemen. And thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Hope you have a great day, whatever you're up to. And the podcast will be back again soon. So many thanks.
Thanks a lot, Peter.
Bye.